10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needs something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
Live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's the Smash Brothers, Robbie Stanley and Adam Vingan. With the latest on your Nashville Predators, this is Smashville's best sports talk
on ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
This is the Smash Brothers. Here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, Robbie Stanley alongside Adam Vingan. And Adam, we've made it to a second week of the show. Nobody kicked us off the air, so we're off to a roaring start here on the Smash Brothers. Just like the Predators had a roaring start last night against the New York Islanders, a gigantic 5-0 win for the Preds last night. Adam, how we doing?
Happy Valentine's Day, Rob.
Happy Valentine's Day to you. You're looking so good over there. My goodness.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. That's what I'm here for. Positive reinforcement.
Thank
here.
Thank you. We could all use a bit of affirmation, especially on Valentine's Day.
No question about it. So Adam, we've been waiting for this Predators team to really make a statement on home ice, and they've played well at times on the road. Haven't really been consistent on home ice with their performances. I think going into last night's game, they were like 1-5 or something like that in their previous 6 home games. They came out last night and just completely curb-stomped the New York Islanders. A 5-0 win. Craig Smith set the tone 35 seconds into the game and ultimately scored, as we all know, his first career NHL hat trick. When you watched the Predators play last night, what stood out to you, other than the obvious of Craig Smith's hat trick and the continued success of Bonino's line, what impressed you the most about the way they approached the game?
Well, the first thing that I was impressed by was that Craig Smith hadn't previously had a hat trick.
I was
in the
shocked.
NHL. I had figured that just based on his history and his scoring 20 goals with regularity throughout his career, that he would have had a hat trick at some point. But after he had 2 goals, somebody asked me on Twitter if he ever had a hat trick. And I was thinking, well, of course he has. And then I went to look it up and he hadn't. Now he does. But to answer your question, what impressed me the most about last night's game was that at no point did they take their foot off the proverbial gas.
Yeah.
They got up early, of course, Craig Smith. Banks went off of Thomas Greiss's back 35 seconds into the game.
After just stripping Nick Leddy. Yes. Great play in the offensive zone.
A great play, great defensive play by Craig Smith to strip Nick Leddy and to score from a very tight angle. But they continued to pressure the Islanders from there. And Thomas Greiss has not had a good time against the Predators this season. He allowed, I believe, 8 goals on 23 shots in 2 appearances, which is a .652 save percentage.
That's not good.
That's not good. Even for me and my rudimentary math skills, it's not good. But just the fact that when they went up 2-0, 3-0, 4-0, they continued to push the pace. And that's when this Predators team is at its most dangerous, is when they're dictating the flow of play regardless of the score. So the fact that they scored early, they got the crowd into it, and we've discussed in length recently the issues they've had at home, the fact that the atmosphere at Bridgestone Arena has not been the same because of those struggles at home. The last night was the closest thing to vintage Bridgestone Arena as I've seen in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So everything worked well for the Predators. Of course, what matters most is can they build off of it? And we'll get to their pivotal home and home back-to-back with the St. Louis Blues coming up this weekend. But if they don't play well in those 2 games, then what they did last night doesn't really matter. It's about whether or not they can use this finally as a launching pad to get back into the playoffs.
Got a good show coming up for you today. Going to get into UC Saros and his ascension into maybe being the Predators starting goaltender as we move ahead here for the rest of the season. We'll talk about that in the next segment. Jeremy Rutherford from The Athletic, who covers the St. Louis Blues, is going to join us at 6:30. But first, you know, I was watching them play last night, and look, the Bonino line continues to just stand out. I mean, they all three were sensational last night against the New York Islanders. That pass that Rocco Grimaldi made on Smith's second goal from behind the net to find Smith in the slot right there was just an incredible play. And, you know, we've talked about this some this year, but that line, I mean, where would this team be without that Bonino line? Because, you know, I think it's both, a huge compliment of how they've played and the way that they've been able to be consistent all year and continue to be productive. And I was talking about this on Morning Drive the other day with Joe Rexroad. You look at those guys, and they're like a top 10 line in the league in terms of the offensive possession metrics and everything that goes along with that. And there's not a star player among that bunch. I mean, they're in the same conversation, you know, with some of the top lines in the league when it comes to that. And I think it's both a huge compliment to how they've played, but also probably an indictment to the other lines the Predators have had, that that's been the one line that's been constant all season long and has really carried the mail for them.
So to put their success in perspective, as you were alluding to, among forward lines with at least 200 minutes played, there's only one line in the NHL that has a higher goals percentage than Grimaldi, Bonino, and Smith, who are at 75%. That would be the Max Pacioretty, Chandler Stephenson, Mark Stone line on the Vegas Golden Knights, who are at 79.2%.
Not bad.
When Grimaldi, Bonino, and Smith have been on the ice at 5-on-5, the Predators have outscored their opponents 27-9. And if you look at expected goals, there are four lines in the league that have outperformed Grimaldi, Bonino, and Smith, whose expected goal percentage, according to MoneyPuck.com, is 62.6%. Those four lines are the aforementioned Pacioretty, Stevenson, Stone line, the Fogel, Stahl, and Svechnikov line with the Carolina Hurricanes, the Palat, Point, Kucherov line with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and the Gensel, Malkin, Rust line with the Pittsburgh Penguins.
So you're talking about some pretty elite company there.
You are. And what's made them so successful is just their game has no frills to it. They just hunt pucks. They're getting into the corners. They're winning battles. You saw it last night on Smith's second goal. Mm-hmm. Bonino and Grimaldi did the work behind the net. Grimaldi fishes the puck out from the end boards and finds Smith with a great centering pass from behind the net in the slot for his second goal. You're not seeing a lot of fancy stuff with that line. They just put, I know it's the worst hockey cliche there is, but they just put pucks to the net. That's really what they do. And all three of them have been incredibly important to this team's success this season. And I agree with you. And I wrote about it a little bit today on The Athletic about John Hines' philosophy about ice time. The top six forwards on this team have seen a slight reduction to their ice time, with the exception of Mikhail Granlund and Kyle Turris, who have seen a spike in their ice time. But Victor Arvidsson is down. Matt Duchene is down. Philip Forsberg is down. Ryan Johansson is down. And John Hines has said that if you have to earn the ice time, of course, to play. It's the only way to avoid complacency, he says. And that just because you're talented doesn't mean you deserve ice time. And I think perhaps that's a splash of water in the faces of some of these players who are used to playing significant minutes regardless of how they're performing. So perhaps this is a wake-up call, or could be a wake-up call to some of those forwards, just because of how well the Bonino line is playing. It's great, but they shouldn't be this team's primary source of offense.
Well, it makes you go back to the Vancouver game on Monday night, where I'm not going to say, you know, those four guys you just talked about were benched, but they didn't play a whole lot. I mean, Matt Duchene ended up, I think, with like 10 minutes and 4 seconds of ice time. Forsberg, Johansson, Arvidsson, all around that 11-minute mark. So not very much ice time for, I think, the four guys who most people would consider their best four forwards the other night. I thought, you know, even though they didn't get on the score sheet, they responded a little bit better. last night against the New York Islanders. Now, look, it was a 5-0 game. Everybody played pretty well for the most part. But I'm interested to see if the message that John Hines was sending those guys, because to me it was a pretty loud and clear message that he was sending on Monday night in Vancouver, I'm interested to see how those four guys in particular continue to respond, especially heading into this weekend and what's going to be a monster matchup with two back-to-back games against the Blues.
So Matt Duchene played 10 minutes, 4 seconds against Vancouver. Philip Forsberg, 11-12. Ryan Johansson, 11-25. And Victor Arvidsson, 11-36. So last night, they played closer to normal minutes. Philip Forsberg was at 13-18. Matt Duchene, 14-56. Johansson, 15-08. And Arvidsson, 15-58. And John Hines said on Wednesday, quote unquote, "I don't have a doghouse." He is not going to belabor the point when it comes to this.
Sure.
He made his point. He sat those players down for a significant portion of the second and third periods on Monday, and he put them right back out there, hoping that they would respond. And I have the quote in front of me that I was referencing before. He said, quote, "The players and I have a good relationship. It's honest, but there's expectations and a standard we need to play at. We need to understand that there's a skill in the game, but there's will. And your will and your compete level allow your skill to come out. It always is a fine balance, but you also have to understand that just because a player's talented doesn't mean they deserve to play. If the standard isn't where it needs to be, then you've got to play the guys that are getting the job done. And the Bonino line is. But the rest of these players that we're speaking of, specifically Johansson, Forsberg, Arvidsson, and Duchene, need to play their part too."
They do, and that's going to be crucial, I think, against the Blues. And we're going to talk about the matchup between the St. Louis Blues coming up a little bit later. But just one last point on the Bonino line. I think the balance that they have there in terms of how they attack is really important. I mean, Rocco Grimaldi's got a ton of speed on the left wing. Craig Smith has speed on the right wing. I think they're different types. I mean, I don't think Craig Smith is quite the blazer that Rocco Grimaldi is. He's more quick with his lateral movement and is able to release his shot very quickly. I think Nick Bonino has done a good job of understanding that those two guys can go get those loose pucks, and what he really needs to do is go to the front of the net and wreak havoc, and that's why I think you've seen Nick Bonino have such a great year offensively. I mean, that whole line has just been so consistent all season long. So hopefully for the Predators' sake, that continues as they move forward here. When we come back here on the Smash Brothers, we've been waiting and waiting for a Predators goaltender to take the net and run with it. So far this year, we really haven't seen it since Pekka Rinne's great start to the season in October. Is UC Saros finally doing that for this Predators team? Adam and I will discuss that next. You're listening to the Smash Brothers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Oh, this hits me right in the feels. Brings me back to the Nintendo 64 days of my childhood.
Yoshi's Story was a great game.
Oh, gosh. Just such a great game.
It was probably a little bit juvenile for me at that point. It was probably aimed at a younger audience, but, man, it was fun.
Fun times.
Yes.
I act like I don't do that now. I mean, I'm 27 years old. That's what my Valentine's night plans are after my wife goes to bed. So, the more you know about Robbie Stanley, there you go. Welcome back into the Smash Brothers. Robbie Stanley alongside Adam Vingan. And, Adam, we were talking last segment about, look, it's been no secret, the goaltending for the Predators this year has not been up to par. It's not been anywhere close to the normal level of goaltending that we've grown accustomed to seeing here in Nashville. And we've been waiting for either UC Saros or Pekka Rinne to really take hold of this team and run with it from a goaltending perspective. And it seems like UC Saros might be starting to do that. Recorded his second shutout of the season last night against the Islanders. I think it's his 9th career shutout overall. In his last 5 games, I want to say that his save percentage is .942.
Yes,
so,
in his past 5 starts. If you exclude the relief appearance against Vancouver, has a .942 save percentage in winning 4 of his past 5 starts. And in those 5 starts, he's allowed 10 goals.
So it's pretty good. Not bad.
Very
there.
Good.
Yeah. So it seems like Saros is starting to figure it out, is starting to play very consistently well for this Predators team. If you're John Hines, do you just kind of have to ride the hot hand now? Because I think they're in a situation, just from a standings perspective, when you have a goaltender get hot, other than back-to-back sets, which you're going to have this weekend with the Blues, I think you just have to ride that hot goaltender as long as you can and then adjust after if maybe he cools off a little bit. But this is exactly, to me, what the Predators have been waiting on in terms of their goaltending this year.
Absolutely. And you mentioned it before the break. Pekka Rinne, I believe, started the season 8-0-2.
Yeah.
I think that's correct. And since then, neither goaltender has done enough to wrangle the job from the other. And we're seeing that over the past few weeks. And that stretch of 4 wins and 5 starts for UC Saros begins with the game in Washington at the end of January. In that same span, Pekka Rinne has started 3 games, and in his 3 starts, his save percentage is .874.
Right.
Now, smaller sample, and as John Hines explained last night, the Vancouver game, which did not go well for anybody, he did not place the blame for their performance on Pekka.
Weird things happen in the Vancouver game.
Weird things happen when the Predators play Vancouver. Like
that fourth goal, that puck was literally going like 8 feet wide. Like, I'm not exaggerating. That puck was going so far wide, and it hit off the butt, I think, of Elias Pettersson, and just went in the net.
If the Predators make the playoffs as a wild card team, it is very possible they could play the Vancouver Canucks in the first round. And since the Vancouver Canucks clicked at about 95% on the power play this season against the Predators, that would not bode well for their chances of getting out of the first round, but I digress. So I do believe that UC Saros should continue to command the net as he has. As you mentioned, Robbie, because of the back-to-back this weekend, both goaltenders will play. And as John Hines has said on multiple occasions, that they need both of them in order to succeed. But today, when asked about perhaps a transition happening in goal, John Hines was a bit more diplomatic. No, not diplomatic. He was more diplomatic last night. He was a bit more, what's the word?
Aggressive, I guess, in terms of making sure that he's really cementing home that there's not a goaltending controversy. As a matter of fact, we have that audio from today at practice at Centennial Sportsplex. Here is Predators head coach John Hines on the goaltending situation.
Well, you have respect for every player. And when you make decisions as a coach, well, first of all, I'd say when you deal with a guy like Pekka, who's the ultimate teammate, high character person, he's in it for the right reasons, extremely competitive guy, you know, he's working on his game, and he understands that he's going to get his opportunity. He is playing well. We're juice is hot. He's playing well. He's finding ways to win. So, you know, I think Pex understands that. You just communicate that with him. But Pex has played very well, and we're going to need him. We're going to need him this weekend, and we're going to need him down the stretch. I think, you know, we have games in hand, but when you have games in hand, it usually means your schedule is a little bit condensed and harder. So we're going to need both guys to play very well. There is no transition going on. It's simply, to be all honest with you, it's just we're making decisions game by game. Juice has had the hot hand, and Pex plays well. As a coach, I feel very comfortable with both guys. So, you know, right now I think that's what our focus is. But to tell Pex that he's not going to play, I think the fact that Juice is playing as well as he is and the type of guy and teammate that Pex is, it's just part of hockey.
And I think if you're the Predators and you watch the way this goaltending situation has unfolded, and not that this is really a surprise to any of us that have been around Pekka Rinne, I mean, you really can't ask somebody in his situation to handle this better than he has, because he's been well aware for years. I mean, he's talked about this at the end of seasons, I think the last 2 or 3 years, that UC Saros, this is going to be his team one day. This is going to be his starting net one day. And we might be seeing that right now. You know, I'm not willing quite yet to go there just because it's been 5 games that UC Saros has played well. Certainly, I think the Predators should continue to ride him as he's playing the best of the two right now. But I think Rinne is fully understanding of the fact that while Saros is playing as well as he is at the moment, he's going to get the majority of the starts.
Yeah, and Pekka's numbers aren't great. His goals against and save percentage, his traditional numbers, but his underlying numbers aren't terrible. If you just isolate it for 5-on-5 this season, according to Evolving Hockey, his goals saved above average is 0.42, and his goals saved above expectation is minus 2.32, which isn't great, but it's not terrible.
Right.
It's definitely below average. You know, where Pekka has really struggled is in shorthanded situations.
Yeah, that's been a nightmare for him.
Of course, the Predators' penalty kill, I believe, is the worst in the league, mm-hmm. or very close to it.
Thank the Vancouver Canucks for that.
Yes. Pekkarinne this season, shorthanded, has a goal saved above average of -10.97 and a goal saved above expectation of -12.57. So most of Pekka's struggles can be pinpointed to poor goaltending on the penalty kill.
Mm-hmm.
But UC Saros hasn't had a great season either.
No.
This stretch has been really good. But before then, you could argue that he was worse than Pekka for long stretches of the season, even as Pekkarinne struggled after that great start. But with where the Predators are in the standings, you have to use every advantage that you have to get back into a playoff spot, which the Predators haven't been in since November 13th. And if UC Saros gives you the best chance to win right now, you have to take advantage of that. And the score last night will show an offensive beatdown, but UC Saros had to make some really big saves in that game at various points. It was not an easy night for him necessarily. So he deserves credit for that just as much as the team in front of him. But I don't blame John Hines for riding the hot hand right now with UC Saros. He is playing very well, and he has earned the opportunity to play as much as he has.
Adam, you made a trip to Milwaukee recently, and as we're sitting here talking about the Predators' goaltending, a bright spot that has emerged this year is Connor Ingram playing in Milwaukee for the Admirals. As we know, Milwaukee is having just a fantastic year in the American Hockey League. When you look at the future of Predators goaltending, I think we've always just assumed that it's going to be Pekkarinne and UC Saros until the day that Rene retires, and I think we probably still feel that way. But how does Connor Ingram factor into this discussion the more and more he continues to play well down in Milwaukee?
Well, he's had a very promising season. He's got a 2.07 goals against average and a .928 save percentage, each of which ranks third among qualified goaltenders in the American Hockey League. And he and Troy Grosnick have had really fabulous seasons for the Admirals, who are leading the AHL. But Ingram in particular, I believe he's 23 years old. They traded a 7th-round pick to get him this summer.
Pretty good value.
It wasn't a trade that generated much attention, but Ingram, who had perhaps soured his relationship with the Tampa Bay Lightning to a point where they felt that everybody needed a fresh start, the Predators have taken advantage of that. Connor Ingram is, I believe, a legit prospect for this team, and I don't anticipate him getting an opportunity in Nashville until after Pekka's contract expires and he presumably retires. But by that point, Connor Ingram will be, I guess, 25
mm-hmm.
and still very young and still in the prime of his career. But the Admirals are definitely pleased, and the Predators should be pleased and hopeful that Connor Ingram offers them quite a bit of promise for their future and goal. If the trajectory continues to be UC Saros taking over as the starter, I think they could do worse than having Connor Ingram as the backup.
No question. And I think, you know, that's very good for an organization that has been looking for that next guy, because it's been Saros and Rene in Nashville for a few years now, and they've been searching for that next guy behind those two, I think. Not only, I'm not going to say to put some back pressure on Rene and Saros, because I don't think that's really been the case. But, you know, if something happens to one of those two goaltenders at some point, you're going to have to be able to bring somebody up that's competent and they can get the job done. And I think Ingram certainly has proven to be that guy. You mentioned Grosnick. He's had a great year in Milwaukee as well. But I think the Predators feel a ton better about that part of their goaltending situation in terms of the prospects they have now than they did at this time a year ago.
Well, I think the interesting thing, too, is that Ingram and Grosnick have alternated starts.
Right.
Because both of them are playing well, so there's never an issue of playing time. They know when they're playing because they play every other game. And I think that works well for all involved. Connor Ingram likes it. Troy Grosnick likes it. Carl Taylor, the head coach of the Milwaukee Admirals, likes it. So, and that was one thing that Connor Ingram told me, was that he likes knowing that he likes knowing when he's going to play.
Yeah.
I think one of the issues that led to his departure from Tampa is the inconsistent playing time that he was receiving at the American Hockey League level, so much so that he asked to be sent to the ECHL.
Just to play.
Just to play, yeah. Which is not something players tend to do. They don't tend to want to go to the ECHL instead of playing in the AHL. So the fact that he has consistent playing time and knows that he's going to play every other game, I believe, has been great for his psyche and his development.
When we come back, Jeremy Rutherford covers the St. Louis Blues for The Athletic. He's going to join us next. We'll get into a lot of different things that have gone on with the St. Louis Blues. A very dramatic week for the St. Louis Blues. That's coming up next. Adam Vingan and Robbie Stanley coming to you on the Smash Brothers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome back to the Smash Brothers here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Adam Vingan, Robbie Stanley, and now joined by my colleague from The Athletic, Jeremy Rutherford. Jeremy, how are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're great. Thank you for joining us here tonight. We'll, of course, get to the home and home that the Predators have with the St. Louis Blues on Saturday and Sunday. But, of course, the big news that you have been covering so well for the past several days is the health of Jay Buhmeister. I'm sure our listeners are aware that Jay collapsed on the bench a few nights ago when the Blues were in Anaheim to play the Ducks. And I know that the Blues released a statement today saying that he underwent a procedure back in Anaheim to have I'm going to make sure I get this right, an implantable cardioverter defibrillator implanted into his heart. So my father's the doctor. I'm not, so I don't understand any of that. But just from your perspective being on the ground in St. Louis, what has this past week been like for you, and what more can you tell us about just the entire scene that played out over the past week?
Well, first of all, I'm glad that you read the procedure that he had and didn't ask me to say that stuff. But no, it has been pretty surreal. And, you know, at the Athletic, we sometimes pick and choose which road games we go to, and I did not schedule to go to Anaheim. So the other night, you guys can probably relate to this. You're watching a game, and all of a sudden on TV, they show that something's going on the Blues bench, and just kind of wonder, you know, what's going on. And obviously, at that point, no one knew. And then at some point, they determine you can, you know, deduct who's not, you know, out there on the ice, and it's Jay Buhmeister, so you know he's down. And then they revive him, and you know he's on the stretcher, and you know I mean, here's a guy who has been a phenomenal athlete his entire life, played in the NHL starting at the age of 19. I just did a player poll a couple weeks ago, and the question was asked, who spends the most time in the weight room? Who's the most fit? And unanimously, the answer was Jay Buhmeister. So to think that this could happen to him and to see it play out on TV was just amazing. So I jumped on an airplane, and I flew out to Vegas and caught the Blues on the next leg of their trip, and was just around the team for the past couple of days. And, you know, they had to get back on the ice and play a hockey game yesterday, and I know that was difficult for them because of what their teammate and close friend has gone through.
How has the team responded to the response from the league in general? All of the teams seem to have reached out in some form or another to offer their support for Jay and the Blues. And I even saw, if I recall correctly, that when the team was recently in Las Vegas before, as you mentioned, playing the Golden Knights last night, that the Golden Knights helped the Blues find support counselors in case the players needed to talk out their feelings, for lack of a better phrasing there. Just from being around the team, how have they felt with just how much of a response and support that they've received from the league at large?
Yeah, Adam, it's been amazing. I think, first of all, beginning in Anaheim the other night, just the medical staff and the training staff, the help they got there. And then on their way to Vegas, George McPhee, the president of the Vegas Golden Knights, reached out and offered a counselor to come speak to the team. And to my knowledge, the way I understand it, it was the counselor who came and spoke to the Vegas players after the mass shooting in Vegas. And so that counselor was able to come and speak to the Blues and, you know, not necessarily one-on-one care, but just kind of speak to the group about what they'd be going through over the next couple of days. And then, like I said, I arrived in Vegas and I show up at the game last night, and outside in the concourse, they have just a massive banner with a picture of Jay Bouwmeester on it. And just fans, both sides, Vegas and the St. Louis Blues fans, walking by and signing basically a huge get well soon card for Jay Bouwmeester. So, you know, between the tweets from all the teams, and you guys know this in Nashville, to see a Blackhawks tweet that well wishes the Blues, that doesn't happen every day. So, you know that, you know, they're like everybody else thinking about Jay Bouwmeester and the St. Louis Blues organization.
Jeremy Rutherford from The Athletic on the line with us. And Jeremy, when you take a look at this Blues team this year, it just seems like from an outsider's perspective, they picked up exactly where they left off a season ago, actually, obviously winning the Stanley Cup, leading the Central Division right now with 74 points. What's kind of been your assessment of the way the Blues have played this year, for a large part without Vladimir Tarasenko?
Yeah, Robbie, it's been great up until the last couple weeks. You know, they lose Vladimir Tarasenko in game number 6 of the season, and you're like, whoa, Nelly, how's this team going to play without their leading goal scorer? But they just really went to work, and they played the style that they played last year in route to the Stanley Cup, just north-south, rolling four lines, physical, forecheck, defense playing well, and getting good goaltending. And so then they built this lead in the Central Division. It got up to, I believe, 10 points, and things were humming along pretty good until about mid-January. And then all of a sudden, the defense is just playing loose, and, you know, Jordan Binnington hasn't been himself. And up front, you know, some of the guys that led him there last year, Ryan O'Reilly, Braden Schenn, Jaden Schwartz, they're just coming up short up front. They've actually given up 3 or more goals in 10 straight games after yesterday's game in Vegas. So this Blues team, you know, the defense has been a staple. The penalty kill has been a staple. Neither one of those are clicking right now. And as a result, we see that what was a 10-point lead in the Central, now it's down to just 1 or 2 points.
Jeremy, so much was made last year of Jake Allen's struggles, obviously Jordan Binnington coming in midway through the year, and that's where everything basically turned around for the Blues. Just from an outsider's perspective, it seems like Jake Allen has rebounded quite nicely this year, obviously in a more limited role as the backup. What have you seen out of Allen so far this year?
Yeah, really well. And I think the Blues had a plan coming in. You know, I'll get to the goaltending in 1 second, but they just wanted to limit the minutes for guys early on in the season because they realized they played until mid-June. So they've tried to do that with the lineup, Robbie. But then with the goaltending, they didn't want to overwork Jordan Binnington early. So even though he was considered the starter 1A after leading the Blues to the Stanley Cup last year, I think they came in with a plan that they were going to balance the starts. And to everybody's surprise, Jake Allen was just terrific, just composed and back to the Jake Allen that we've seen, you know, at times in years past. That's not to say that he's had a terrific career, but at times he's been really good. And so he's played that way this year. Jordan Binnington, good the first couple months, it just things look a lot different with him since, I would say, late December. His season save percentage is still above 9. It's a 908, but you look at his, like, last 14 starts, I think he's at 883. So it's 1 or 2 goals a night that are just out of character for Jordan Binnington. But fortunately, as you mentioned, Robbie, they've had Jake Allen, and he's played great.
And with the back-to-back games against the Predators this weekend, I'm sure both goaltenders will play just as the Predators anticipate, both Pekka-Rinne and UC Saros playing. Jeremy Rutherford here, my colleague at The Athletic, covers all things St. Louis Blues. Jeremy, before we let you go, last week on the show we had Pierre LeBrun, and we were talking about the Norris Trophy race and how it seems to be a two-horse race between John Carlson and Roman Josi. And when we talked to him about it, he went out of his way to bring up the play of Alex Pietrangelo and how he should be getting more Norris Trophy love than he is. So as someone who watches him every day, make the case for Alex Pietrangelo getting a little bit more Norris Trophy buzz.
Yeah, and I agree with everybody that puts Carlson and Yossi in that race. Carlson looked to be the runaway winner for the Norris for a long time, and still probably is. And Yossi's just incredible. So, you know, anybody that could say anything different, it's difficult to understand because those two guys are right there at the top. You know, having said that, Alex Pietrangelo is having a whale of a season. And, you know, I don't want this to come across as, somebody saying that he just doesn't get enough credit. He's been a two-time All-Star. He was an All-Star this year. So he does get a lot of credit. But when you watch him night in and night out, he's great in his own zone. He plays penalty kill, and he's putting up points offensively, maybe not to the point of Carlson, but, who is. So, you know, when I look and I see him playing a couple minutes a night on the power play, a couple minutes a night on the penalty kill, and he plays the most minutes on the team, five on five, he's getting the ice time in all different, categories, and he's doing well in all of them. So, you know, is he, you know, number one, number two? Probably not. But like Pierre said, I really, really do believe that he's in that conversation.
Jeremy, last thing for you. When you look at what's taken place in the city of St. Louis over the course of the last 12 months, obviously winning the Stanley Cup, hosting the All-Star game last month, what has the last 12 months of hockey for the Blues done in that city in terms of the Blues' popularity? I know they were already a very popular team, but how much have you seen that increase?
I can tell you this. When I walk around St. Louis or drive around St. Louis, to see people in Blues gear and not St. Louis Cardinal gear, that's all you got to do to tell you where they've come in the last 12 months. And it goes a little bit beyond. I mean, they had the Winter Classic a few years ago.
Yep.
Sounds like they're going to be the visiting team in the Winter Classic next year in Minnesota. And then, Robbie, you said it, you know, you win a Stanley Cup, you host an All-Star game. I did a story where I talked to the league, and they said that we love, St. Louis's management, talking about on the business side, and we'll go back there for a big event anytime. The Blues, they've made the upgrades to the Enterprise Center. They just built an $80 million practice facility. I know that St. Louis Blues, they've had the days of Brett Hall. They've had, Chris Pronger, Al McInnes. There have been a lot of good days in Blues history, and no one wants to overlook them. But there is no way that there has been a better time to be a Blues fan than right now with what they're doing on and off the ice.
Jeremy Rutherford has been our guest here on the Smash Brothers on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You can find his work covering the St. Louis Blues on theathletic.com. Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you this weekend.
Yep, thanks, boys.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thanks, Rob.
When we come back, we will discuss this home-and-home series with the St. Louis Blues Saturday and Sunday and just how significant it could be in determining not only the Predators' trade deadline plans, but perhaps whether or not this playoff push is for real. We'll be back. You know, I always wanted an ocarina.
Did you?
Well, of course, we're referencing The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time here on the Smash Brothers ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we're going to run out of Smash Brothers music eventually.
No, we're not.
Yeah, that's true. We probably won't because there's quite a lot of it. And we've got a good mix here today. We've had some Yoshi Story. I think we had some Kirby. Now we've got some Zelda, and you'll have to wait till next week to see what I dig out of YouTube. But that's next week.
You are such a professional.
This week, I've learned from the best here at ESPN 102.5 The Game.
And your co-host, Robbie Stanley.
My co-host, Robbie Stanley. Anyway, as we wrap up the show here on this Friday evening, we're going to discuss the significance, the importance of this home-and-home back-to-back against the St. Louis Blues. We talked earlier in the program about the Predators' 5-0 win against the New York Islanders last night at Bridgestone Arena, and whether or not this is finally the game where the Predators get back on track and put themselves back in the playoff picture. And I think we're going to know by the end of this weekend whether or not we can put our belief behind this group. Mm-hmm. And we've been talking about that a lot over the past several months, considering that, one, the Predators have not won more than two consecutive games since late October.
Right.
October 22nd through 29th, to be exact. They haven't been in a playoff spot since November 13th. But as they enter this home-and-home with the Blues, before the games today, the Predators are 3 points back of the Arizona Coyotes for the second wild-card spot in the Western Conference with a whopping four games in hand.
Which is incredible that that's the case this time of year.
It is. And as we always say, games in hand only matter if you win them.
That's correct.
So, Robbie, we look at these two games against St. Louis. Jeremy Rutherford talked about how this team, the Blues, have struggled as of late. They've been porous defensively. The Predators just scored 5 goals against the Islanders. What do you think the significance of these two games are in determining the Predators' late season push for a playoff spot?
Well, I think this is about as big as it gets for the Predators in terms of a regular season stretch. I mean, I said on the morning show this morning, 3 out of 4 points, I think if you're the Predators, you take that all weekend long. You know, 2 out of 4, I guess you would take because that would give you 4 out of your last 6. I think it's pretty difficult to ask them to win outright both games, but I think 3 out of 4 points during this stretch, if you're the Predators, you would take all day. And I think that would tell me that they're still trending in the right direction. And look, this is, you know, I understand that St. Louis has struggled defensively as of late. When they're on, they're still an incredibly difficult team to play against because their defensemen, number one, are mobile, but number two, they're huge. And they're really difficult to penetrate and get to the middle of the ice. And John Hines has spent a lot of time talking about, you know, that's his plan. That's the game plan for the Predators under John Hines, is to get to the middle of the ice, is to get to those high danger areas with more regularity. To me, this is on four of the guys we talked about earlier. Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson, Victor Arvidsson, Philip Forsberg. These are the type of games where you need your big players to show up. You know what you're going to get out of that Bonino line. You know what you're going to get out of Roman Josi. You need to get to a point very soon where you know what you're going to get out of those four guys. They're being paid like superstar players, at least have the contract terms of superstar players. I mean, Victor Arvidsson's not getting paid a ton of money. But I think these type of games, this is where you need your big players to show up. And we've been waiting and waiting for that to happen. I liked some of what I saw from those four guys specifically against the New York Islanders. I know they didn't score like we talked about earlier, but I liked the energy of what I saw. I think defensively they played better. And you saw it reflected in the ice time. It wasn't a ton of difference in the ice time, but they played more than they did against Vancouver, and I think John Hines felt like his message was delivered. Can they continue that? Because they need to get their top six solidified. And what I mean by that is this. You need to be in a spot where you feel like you're building chemistry with lines. They've been mixing and matching all season long, looking for a line to stick together that's not that Bonino line. This weekend against St. Louis needs to be where those top six forwards on the top two lines, they've got to start building chemistry and getting their way into playing and cementing what these lines are. Things are going to happen. People are going to get injured. You're going to have to mix and match somewhere along the way. But I think it's really important that these top six forwards get going because, look, we can talk about the Bonino line all we want and how great they've been, and they have. But ultimately, if this team's going to make the playoffs, those guys are going to have to be the difference makers.
Now, a unrelated plot line that just came to mind as I was listening to you talk, and I promise you I was listening. I heard everything you said.
You better.
And if not, I can go back and listen to this on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Look,
that was good.
Yes.
That was nice.
I'm learning. I'm quickly learning. This is going to be the first time that the Predators and Blues have played each other since Robert Bortuzzo injured Victor Arvidsson. Well, let me correct that. They've played since then. But this is the first time that Robert Bortuzzo is going to be in the lineup playing against the Predators since he injured Victor Arvidsson. Now, that was 2.5 months ago.
Like he was chopping a tree down, yeah.
Do you think there's any carryover? I know it's been a long time. Do you think someone gives Robert Bortuzzo a little bit of the business?
Well, I think they'll probably give him the business. Now, what does that mean in terms of the Predators? Like, is there really anybody on the Predators right now that's like this enforcer-like figure.
Other than Austin Watson, he's a reluctant
and he's
enforcer.
Reluctantly doing that. And look, to be honest with you, the Predators are in a spot right now where, I mean, they really can't worry about that. I mean, they got to worry about the points. In a perfect world, would you like to be in a spot where, you know, in standings, of course, it's an important game at this time of year, but you could get into a little extracurricular stuff maybe after the whistle with Robert Bortuzzo? Because, look, he's not a very popular guy in that Predators locker room. That was a it was a dirty hit. It was a dirty sequence of plays that he had on Victor Arvidsson that had a big impact on Victor Arvidsson. I think still is having a big impact on Victor Arvidsson.
I talked to him about that today, and he didn't want to place blame on the injury, but I do think it has affected him, and John Hines even mentioned it as well, because I plan on writing about that for The Athletic next
week.
Spoiler. Yes. I'm great with the teases here today, but this, even if you expand past these two games, this home and home with St. Louis, they've got a tough schedule coming up.
Yeah.
The rest of the week leading into the trade deadline, they play the Carolina Hurricanes at home, who always give them fits.
Always.
And a good team. They play Chicago on the road on Friday. Chicago has started to recede from the pack, but still kind of in the race, and those games can always be challenging for the Predators. And then the following night, next Saturday, at Bridgestone Arena against the Columbus Blue Jackets, who have done a tremendous job despite having pretty much their entire roster decimated by injuries at some point or another,
right,
including currently Seth Jones, who's out for, I think, 8 to 10 weeks, which is unfortunate because he's been having
gigantic
a great
loss.
Season. But the Predators have 5 games before the trade deadline. We talked about the trade deadline last week. So not only are these 2 games part of determining whether or not we believe in this Predators team, but it also may help determine David Poile's methodology for the trade deadline in a week plus.
Yeah, and I think, look, I mean, how many times this year have we reacted to a game and thought, okay, well, I mean, this is it. Like, when they won in Washington, I was like, you know, that's the type of win that this team has been searching
for. And New Jersey.
And in New Jersey. I mean, it's a resilient type of win. It's exactly what John Hines has been preaching. Last night felt different because of the way it happened. And I think more specifically because of the goaltending. I mean, goaltending, even when they won some of these games, was a question mark. And then it seems like UC Saros is pulling his way out of that. That, to me, is why last night felt different. But that doesn't change the fact that the schedule you have coming up is daunting. I mean, the St. Louis Blues are the best team in the West. Carolina comes in. They're really good at puck possession. They give the Predators trouble all the time. So the schedule coming up is really not in your favor. And we've mentioned the games in hand that you have. Well, all that really means now is you got a ton of games coming up in a very short amount of time, and you're going to need not only both goaltenders to play well, but you got to find a way to stay fresh. So that's something the Predators have to keep in mind. Like I said, I think 3 out of 4 points on this trip, and I say trip, this one game trip up to St. Louis coming back home on Sunday against the Blues. If you can get that, and remember, they swept the Blues earlier this season in a similar situation. I think one game was on a Saturday night, and then they were home on a Monday, won both of those games. So they're undefeated against the Blues this year. If they can come out of here with 3 out of 4 points, I think they're going to be in a spot where they're feeling pretty good heading into next week.
Well, we will find out here shortly with the first game tomorrow at 2 p.m. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So pregame with Darren McFarland at 1 o'clock?
1 o'clock.
Lovely. Love afternoon hockey.
Hockey Day in America on Sunday.
And Hockey Day in America on Sunday, 5 o'clock start, NBC game. Hockey Day in America, I believe a triple header of games.
I believe so.
And
starting at 11.
Yes, and the NBC headquarters will be here in Nashville, I believe on the plaza outside of Bridgestone Arena. So definitely check that out. But Robbie, another great show, I think, right?
Oh, yeah. 2 for 2, baby.
All right.
Another great show here on the Smash Brothers. It was awesome.
Well, we will be back next Friday for a shortened version of our show with the Predators playing the Blackhawks.
Yeah, in Chicago next Friday.
In Chicago. But we will talk to you next Friday. For Robbie Stanley, I'm Adam Vingan. Thank you for listening to the Smash Brothers on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's Social Casino.